This week, Pippa Evans on pasties, John Finnemore on the Euro, Mitch Benn on Barlow.
And John Holmes is on something, but we're not sure what. I'm Hugh Dennis.
I'm Steve Punt. Welcome to...
The Noel Show!
Thank you very much. So, the Royal Jubilee. Why now? The Queen acceded to the throne in February 1952 and was crowned in June 1953, so it's either 4 months late or a year early, depending on your level of pedantry. No, they decided to hold it in early June to coincide with her official birthday, so all those people sneering on Twitter about Stevie Wonder singing Happy Birthday were wrong, and Stevie was right, because like many Americans, he's much more knowledgeable about royalty than most British people, and certainly most BBC people.
The BBC's coverage of Sunday's Thames pageant came in for a lot of flack after one commentator called the Queen Her Royal Highness rather than Her Majesty, and another, according to the Times, described the Duchess of Cambridge's hat as...
made by the same milliner who made Nelson's hat for Waterloo.
Yes, that's Nelson, the famous soldier, who, with characteristic presence of mind, had a hat made for a land battle 10 years after he had died at sea at the Battle of Trafalgar. The same designer, incidentally, who made Wellington Speedos for the evacuation from Dunkirk.
But the truth is, the coverage was a bit disappointing because the event itself was a bit disappointing and there was nothing anyone could do to disguise it. Some countries have a naval parade. We have a flotilla of rowing boats and canal barges, which by 2015 will be a naval parade.
And there were unfortunate moments. For a start, several of the presenters kept saying...
Well, you're probably not getting this on TV. You really have to be here to sense the atmosphere.
Which is an abject admission of failure if you're presenting a television show. But the presenters were clearly desperate. I defy any broadcaster to make 60 narrow boats chugging down a 300-yard-wide river at 4 miles an hour exciting. Although Sky, as ever, had a go.
You're watching Sky HD in glorious HD as our Skycopter is giving you these 3D HD full stereo sound widescreen pictures of the biggest group of narrow boats to approach central London ever in history. History is happening here in front of our eyes in full HD as our Sky cameras bring you this historic sight in 3D high definition right here on Sky, where our Sky cameras are bringing you full coverage of this historic sight. It's Narrow Boat Sunday here on Sky. The greatest epic clash of the canal craft in the history of the world. Sky, because we believe in barges.
At the centre of it all, though, the event proved that the Queen is an example to all of us in Cameron's Britain. She's still having to work in her mid-80s. Not many octogenarians would stand in the cold for hours just so people could look at them, unless they're in an A&E unit, obviously. But she did it. There's something a bit weird about saying long live the Queen and then making her stand in cold and rain for 3 hours. Whose idea was that?
The plans for this river pageant look splendid, Mother. I favour holding it in February. And I think you should swim some of it.
The odd thing, though, was that it worked. It was so perfectly British in its combination of history, rain and nagging disappointment that... that by the time they reached Tower Bridge, there was a surge of patriotism urging them to go on down the Thames, cross the Channel and invade France. Or maybe sink the Spanish, although they seem to be managing that perfectly well themselves.
It was gloriously weird. Not only was there a special bell tower boat, but the London Symphony Orchestra were blasting out tunes as they passed certain landmarks. As they passed MI6 headquarters at Vauxhall, they played... Then, as they passed the City of London... and as they passed the Houses of Parliament...
while a group of accountants chased Baroness Wasi up and down the terrace.
The next day, the Queen had to sit through the concert at the palace, and that event proved three things.
Thing one.
That nobody knows the second verse of God Save the Queen.
Thing two.
That the Archbishop of Canterbury knows all the verses of Obladi Oblada.
And thing three.
That was fair enough for Rolf to say...
Do you know what it is yet?
While Cheryl Cole was singing.
And after all that, the Queen then operated some ridiculous pretend crystal thing and began the biggest chain of fires across the country since last August, I believe.
Again, this was fabulously British. I went to the lighting of my local beacon in the South Downs, an occasion more representative of this great nation you could not find. There was a crowd of people, of 100 or so, huddled together for warmth on a hilltop. The line of beacons we were supposed to see was obscured by a tree. And round the flaming beacon itself, health and safety had put a barrier of black and yellow tape on which was written over and over again, "Caution, wet paint." The beacon chain is another thing we pretend is traditional, but isn't really.
No, we don't really care about tradition at all. Opinion polls consistently show a majority of people would like Prince William to be king next, missing out Charles, showing a total lack of understanding of the basic traditions of royalness. You don't just choose the next monarch, otherwise we might as well go the whole way and choose Harry.
Well, this is a magnificent coronation for our new king. And as the procession begins, here come the royal family. First, Prince William, the brother who stood aside for him in the uniform of the RAF. Next to him, his uncle, Prince Andrew, in the uniform of the Royal Navy. And finally, King Harry himself, in the uniform of... Oh, dear. Oh, dear, he's done it again.
Now, since the budget, the opinion polls have seen a bit of a swing. Taking that swing and running with it, please welcome Pippa Evans.
George, 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 what have you done? You ain't popular with anyone. First you tax a pie, and you don't say why. Well, you said something about ambient heat whilst faking love for sausage meat. But the public all cried no. And so you turned around, George. You told everybody that you changed your mind. They say your budget has to be the most confused in history. But at least no one noticed that Hunt Jeremy. George, George, George. Though the charities are pleased, you look a tool. Do you think it might have shown more nous to finish the budget instead of playing at the White House? I know Obama's cool, but he pitied a fool. Turn around, George. You're turning just as quickly as a VAT rotisserie. Just go running back to the bank. You know you look just like an autocross with Tom Hanks. So if I were you, I'd stop squeezing the poor. Maybe go and get this companies offshore. Cause if you're lucky, George, you could turn this around. But stop turning around. Please stop turning around. Cause you're gonna get so dizzy you'll crash down to the ground. George.
Now, when we span the news bottle this week, the tricky end ended up pointing at our next guest. Please welcome John Finnemore.
All right, let's talk about the Eurozone crisis. Yes, we do have to. Well, because it's the news, that's why. Come on, don't be like that. We'll make it fun. We'll learn, we'll think. Maybe we'll even laugh a little. Maybe. I mean, it's theoretically possible, that's what I'm saying. But, all right, I tell you what, we'll do one silly story just to limber up, and then we've got to buckle down and talk about the Spanish banking sector, okay? Okay, so yesterday the Press Association reported the following story.
Police in the Forest of Dean are looking for a man who has been seen doing star jumps dressed as a Smurf.
Well, of course they are. Who wouldn't be? Apparently this rogue Smurf runs up to women doing star jumps, and the police are concerned this might be a come-on. Really? A come-on? Offhand, I don't think I can think of a more ridiculous or unwanted approach any man might make to any woman. Yesterday, David Cameron flew to Berlin to give Angela Merkel his opinion on the Eurozone crisis.
Oh, David, hello. I was worried that since you're not in the Eurozone and you refused to sign that fiscal compact in January, you might not feel able to share your important opinions anymore. No, that doesn't worry you. Okay, good, yeah. So Eurobonds, oh, you think, right? Okay, hang on, let me just write this down in my special invisible notebook. Yeah.
You see, the thing is, Cameron advocates Eurobonds because they spread borrowing risk equally, but, no, hang on, look, I tell you what, here is an analogy.
And not just any analogy. John is about to attempt to break the record for the longest, the most tortuous, and yet simultaneously the most oversimplistic analogy in Now Show history.
So, a German, a Spaniard, and a Greek walk into a restaurant.
He's off.
Along with an Irishman, a Frenchman, a Cypriot, and you get the idea. But not the Englishman. They had a row about spicy food, so he refused to come. Anyway, they don't want to get too drunk or spend too much money, so they make some ground rules.
Okay, guys, just one drink each per course, and no one order lobster, okay?
By which I mean the agreement that each country would limit borrowing to 3%. See, I told you this would be fun. And so the dinner began, and everyone had a lot of fun. But the different diners had different approaches to the rule they'd made. Some bent the rules a little bit, like, perhaps surprisingly, Germany.
Okay, maybe a couple of extra beers, but I have prudently lined my stomach with cabbage and potatoes.
By which I mean Germany's solid manufacturing base. Some stuck to it quite strictly, like, again, perhaps surprisingly, Spain.
No more for me, gracias, because you see, we have made this agreement and we are not allowed to...
And then, in a class of his own, there was Greece. Who wasn't so much drinking wine under his coat as dancing on the bar, downing a yard of ouzo and wearing a lobster as a hat. But eventually, of course, the dinner ended and the bill arrived, by which I mean the financial crisis of 2008. And with it came the hangovers.
Okay, so everyone pays for what they had, yeah?
Hey, guys, a funny thing you're gonna love. I seem to have come without my wallet.
Ah, would you look at that there, so have I.
So the country's people, whatever, who had brought their wallets had no choice but to lend the others some money or everyone would get kicked out of the restaurant, by which I mean the euro would collapse.
Okay, fine, but only if you all drink a pot of black coffee.
By which I mean strict austerity measures, but the coffee just gets added to the bill, by which I mean the austerity measures restrict growth, and so Germany has to shell out again. And, of course, some austerity measures were harsher than others.
Okay, Greece, wake up! You need to take this coffee!
But there's 6 gallons of it.
That's right.
Well, okay.
No, as an enema.
And so now Greece isn't sure it's worth it.
Well, maybe I'll just skip out of the restaurant without paying.
By which I mean default and leave the Eurozone.
I tell you what, I have a little think.
By which I mean hold elections.
And then I'll let you know whether I want to stay here but take off the enema or skip restaurant but have to survive on cat food.
Return to the drachma. And while he's doing that, poor old Spain, who you remember stuck strictly to the rules, has discovered that nonetheless its private individuals and corporations have borrowed so much during the booms that the banks can now no longer handle the debt.
And what is that in the metaphor, John?
That. That is... I'll tell you what it is.
Come on, quickly.
It's vodka jelly.
Hey, guys, I've just eaten 12 of these little jelly things. I think there may have been some booze in them.
So now Spain needs to borrow some cash too, but Germany's had enough of this.
Am I the only one who bought their wallet?
Which is why Britain turned up yesterday.
Hello, yes, yeah, sorry to intrude, none of my business really, but I've been getting drunk in a different restaurant, and, I'm worried that if you get chucked out of yours, then I'll get chucked out of mine, so I thought I might pop over and give you some advice.
Oh, great. Why are you dressed like a smurf?
Don't know. Anyway... My idea is, why don't you just split the bill equally?
Introduce Eurobonds.
No, that's not fair. I didn't have the tapas or the Slovakia or whatever dish Portugal is famous for. The only way I'll agree to split the bill is if from now on, any time we eat out, I get to choose the restaurant, order the meals, and hold everybody's wallets.
Introduce closer fiscal union.
No way. Last time you picked a restaurant, you took us to that horrible place we all hated.
World War II.
Well, if you're going to bring that up every time.
And so now it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Greece has locked himself in the loo, already has one leg out the window. The bouncer is about to throw Spain out unless someone pays for his vodka jelly. And France, brilliantly, has this week reduced its retirement age from 62 to 60, basically saying,
while we are waiting, I think I'll have a bottle of champagne.
And Britain stands in the doorway, watching the mayhem, on the one hand, glad he's not part of it, but on the other, knowing it's desperately important to him how it's resolved and unable to do anything to get anyone to pay him any attention except star jumps. Thank you very much.
Now, what with the Jubilee and the imminent collapse of the Euro, you could be forgiven for not noticing the finest story of the week. A Scottish town called
Dahl
is trying to twin with an American town called
Boring.
So as you drive in, there'd be a big sign that says,
welcome to Dahl, twinned with Boring.
And if you go there by train, you get
Dahl, this is Dahl. God, it's Dahl.
Football team?
Stenhouse Muir, nil. Dahl, Dahl.
Local facilities.
Welcome to the Church of Dahl,
as they call the local Halfords. In other non-Jubilee news, Starbucks are hoping the royal celebrations were big enough to distract attention away from their Twitter feed, where they asked all their followers in Ireland to
show us what makes you proud to be British.
They may as well have said,
what's your favourite thing about Oliver Cromwell?
Of course, no such problems in Scotland.
Welcome to Dahl Starbucks.
The irony, of course, is that Starbucks now have an empire larger than the British one ever was.
Meanwhile, in Argentina, Prime Minister Cristina Kirchner has declared that British oil exploration off the Falkland Islands is illegal and has decided to sue 5 British companies involved, which isn't in itself that worrying. Now, the worrying thing is that one of the companies is called Argos Resources.
Now, frankly, they're not going to find much oil if they're only using resources from Argos.
Have you found the oil yet?
No, we don't seem to be having much luck drilling.
What are you using?
This half-price Bosch hammer drill. And this online exclusive Dremel multi-tool.
We've only got 30 metres down.
Not anymore.
Why's that?
I've just bought this special 100-metre dual-input exterior extension lead. Just £6.99.
All right, let's get boring.
Twinned with Dahl. And in America, Kevin Costner is being sued by fellow Hollywood star Stephen Baldwin. Jointly, they owned a company that provided technology to help clear up the oil from the BP spill, which is a relief, because the oil business normally gets that stuff from Argos.
This highly absorbent rubber oil clearing mat, only £10. This patent crustacean wiping cloth, only £5.99. And this automatic seagull washer is half price.
Catch it, clean it, Argos it. Now, this week it's been reported that ancient vampire bodies have been unearthed by archaeologists in Bulgaria. 2 skeletons were found staked down by large metal spikes, part of an ancient European belief that the dead would rise. In a similar way, we normally keep this next man safe by attaching him to our scripts with a paperclip. Would you please welcome this week, by royal appointment, John Hall!
Thanks very much, thank you, yes. And, of course, there was much criticism levelled at the BBC over the Jubilee weekend, with people bleating that its television coverage was
lamentable, inane and pointlessly celebrity-driven.
Making you wonder if said critics have ever seen television before. The backlash, though, should come as no surprise. Certainly not to anyone who saw the BBC's coverage of the Charles Taylor war crimes verdict earlier this week, which was hosted by Fern Cotton live from The Hague.
Mr. Taylor, would you please rise for the sentence of the court?
Loving it, quite frankly.
Mr. Taylor, for the foregoing reasons, the trial chamber unanimously sentences you...
This is epic.
...to a single term of imprisonment of 50 years.
I am so happy.
For all of the counts on which you've been found guilty.
Also, lots of tunes on the way.
still absolutely loving this.
Anyway, more rightly this week, there have also been complaints about the cynicism of certain British companies. I don't know whether you've seen this, cashing in on the Jubilee. But come on, who among us here wouldn't want to celebrate Her Majesty's 60 years on the throne by eating a Kit Kat, right? That's exactly the same as a usual Kit Kat, except for one weekend only, they branded it a Brit Cat. And if that wasn't genius enough for you, on top of that marketing masterstroke, you could have also had a loaf of Kingsmill, temporarily called Queensmill, topped off with a dollop of, that's right, Marmite. Yeah, and then why not chuck everything in the dishwasher alongside, I kid you not, a limited edition Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth, Diamond Jubilee 2012 celebrity souvenir all-in-one Powerball finish tablet. Right, they haven't changed the tablet. They haven't changed the name. In fact, they haven't done any work at all. All they've done is put a flag on the packet and written limited edition Jubilee dishwasher tablets under it in silver letters. That's all they've done. Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, I'll buy these. Yeah. Yeah, look at those. I'll buy these and I'll keep them so I can look back and show them to my grandchildren who, in years to come, will see the limited edition Diamond Jubilee souvenir dishwasher tablets that I've kept to celebrate Her Majesty's Diamond Jubilee of 2012. And then my grandchildren will turn to me and they will see my memories of that momentous occasion reflected in my eyes. And they will say to me, Grandad, are you sodding mad? The most tenuous Jubilee promotion of all this week, though, surely, surely goes to Wimpy. You remember Wimpy, the weird restaurant chain that's a sort of demented, deformed half-brother of McDonald's that no one talks about? That, remember Wimpy? Well, Wimpy came up with a Jubilee winner.
Royals eat free, 1st to the 5th of June.
What? What? The royal family, should they be passing a Wimpy, presumably on a barge, can pop in... Pop in to eat free. That's not a promotion, is it? That's absolutely mindless wishful thinking. Slightly ludicrous. Unless they've started doing Swan Burger or something. But no, wait though, no. Small print. See, it's not the royal family as such. No, the full promotion goes...
On this magnificent celebratory Diamond Jubilee weekend, if your name is Royal, you can claim a free toffee sundae.
Yeah, let's all pause and hang out more bunting. Now, look, I've been... on the electoral roll. OK, I've looked and I've counted and I've found that there are 2,484 people with the surname Royal in the UK. Conversely, also right now in the UK, there's only about one Wimpy. So my advice is that you, dear people called Royal, right, you should all turn up at once because, by my estimate, they'll probably run out of toffee sundaes round about number 130 on the list, which, and I have checked, is Gavin Royal of King's Lynn, or Queen's Lynn if they're cashing in, and... And everyone else on that list will have to make do with a Wimpy Bender in a Bun, which, by the way, Wimpy, is the stupidest named item of fast food that there's ever been. Right, if you haven't ever seen Wimpy's signature Bender in a Bun, by the way, right, what it is a completely circular sausage that, according to the description of it on their menu, is an all-pork Wimpy Bender... served curled on a white bun. And that is just plain wrong. Now, I don't know about you, but if a food item's description contains the fact that the food item in question has been curled off onto anything, let alone a bun, then I'm pretty much going to pass. I don't want anything served curled on anything, thanks very much. Plus, you've called it a bender in a bun, and I can tell you now... And I can tell you now that I'm not going to go into a Wimpy and ask for a bender in a bun any more than I'm going to go into a Kentucky Fried Chicken and ask for a cock in a bap. Anyway, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Mitch Penn.
Hang on. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not actually allowed to write a song at this time, as under emergency Jubilee legislation, all topical songs this week must be written by Gary Barlow. Over to you, Gary.
God bless your majesty, 60 glorious years. I've written the single and I've played the gig, I'm in everybody's ears. I'm doing everything I can think of to make this special day. If I can beg a moment of your time. There's something I want to say. I want a knighthood, give me a knighthood. I really want a knighthood, can I have a knighthood? Make me sick, can I go on pretty, pretty please? I'm down on my knees to go down on my knees. Cause I don't care if nobody loves me, just as long as your majesty dubs me. So can I have a knighthood, can I have a knighthood? Can I have a knighthood, please? Cause your majesty, I'm one of the true believers. I'm a musical Norman St. John Stevers. Look at all the loyalty I showed. If I suck up any harder, my head'll implode. Cause Paul's got a knighthood, Elton's got a knighthood, Tom's got a knighthood, I should have a knighthood. It's nothing more than my just reward. While you're ill is, grab your sword. I want a nice big certificate to hang in my lobby, and a shiny metal medal I can wave at Robbie. Ha ha, ha ha, you haven't got one. I want a knighthood, just a little knighthood. Can I have a knighthood, please?
Now, Jedward carried the Olympic torch this week.
It's already funny,
ladies and gentlemen. They carry the Olympic torch, which led Sebastian Coe to say, and I quote, "My life has been leading up to this. For 30 seconds, I was Jedward's warm-up man."
Well, Seb's set the bar quite high there. So we've asked our audience, what would be the culmination of their life's ambition?
It's rather sad, this. It goes, "Thanks. I think we both know that my lack of serious ambition is the source of many of my problems. But very good of you to bring it up on what was supposed to be a fun night out."
"Landing my dream job as an ambient temperature pasty inspector."
"To dress up as Ingmar Bergman's Grim Reaper and parade up and down outside my local old people's home and let nature take its course."
I like this one. "Like my life's ambition, to dress Eric Pickles up as a troll and hide him under London Bridge in preparation for the next government work scheme." "Getting to level two of Angry Birds." That's great. The Prime Minister's in tonight. That's very good.
What would be the culmination of your life's ambition? "I'm an auditor. Ambition reached."
So thank you very much for sharing those sometimes rather strange ambitions with us. And thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye!
That was an Alco starring Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis, with Mitch Benn, Pippa Evans, John Holmes and John Finnemore. It was written by the cast, with additional material from John Hunter, Jane Lammercroft, Jack Bernhardt and Nadia Kamal. It was developed with Bill Dare, and the producer was Victoria Law.